Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And that would be true. And what else is true?
It's almost Mother's Day.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. You, I'm sure. You are truly Andrew David James, aren't you?
That's the rumor. Yes.
So that leaves me to be?
You have to be Michael Sterling.
Oh, okay.
No other options, man.
This week.
I've tried to change that a number of times, but it's never worked for me. What an amazing, amazing week we've had. And I got to tell you, Mother's Day coming up.
Mother's Day,
you couldn't have asked for better weather right now. Things are getting to be beautiful here. And Mother's Day brunch is going to be crazy. I tried to get a reservation, take my wife out.
Right.
There are no restaurants available.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think we're going to do McDonald's drive-thru. I'm not sure if that's exactly appropriate for Mother's Day, but I think that's what we're looking at. Everything's gone. I called 3 or 4 restaurants. I'm like, oh, no, I missed the boat. So Daddy may be cooking for Mother's Day. Surprise, honey. I wanted to do this to surprise you. I didn't wait too long to get my reservation.
Wow. Are you sure? You need to try some other restaurant.
I may have to. It's interesting, too, though. I mean, when you look at going out on Mother's Day, that's a whole involvement that you're digging into there. That's a series. You're going out with a bunch of other people. We made us do Mother's Day dinner or something like that instead. So
that's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah,
as long as it's honored, right?
We'll see how it goes, and I'll let you know how acceptable
Please.
It turned out to be.
I might just show up. I don't have any place to go.
That's right. Well, Michael, here it is, May 11th, 2017, and we are headed into what looks like a really exciting summer of theater here in Los Angeles.
You think?
Yeah, I do.
Yes, we are. And where am I? I'm sorry. Am I on the wrong page? Yes, I am. You see?
Our spontaneity is out the window today. I've got to get a retake.
And one of those shows is what we'll be talking about today. It's called Hashtag The Wall.
That's right. And here to tell us a little more about that project is one of the great minds behind this project.
Yes, that's right. Boy, I'm just a beat behind.
That's how I lived my entire life.
Really?
Man. That's right.
I started this morning this way, and I'm ending up worse. Let's give him, what'd you say?
Here we go one more time.
Thank you.
And what I said is, here to tell us a little more about that project is one of the great minds behind it.
That is right, Andrew. You're absolutely right. Steve Cisneros joins us, ladies
That's
and gentlemen.
That's right. Big applause for Steve. Let's give
Welcome.
It up.
There you go.
That is about how my entire week has gone so far. Desperately trying to catch up. I feel like the world is leaving me in the dust, man. Well, obviously, we look forward to hearing a little more from Steve here in just a minute, but we're going to take a little time here, Michael, and thank our sponsors.
I think so. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed.
That's right. We got a couple of great sponsors, and obviously we're really grateful to have them involved with the show.
Yes, we are. And in addition to that, and before we speak with Steve, Andrew, how was your week?
Thank you for asking, Michael. It was a busy week. Obviously, a lot of stuff coming up, and as the summer kind of starts to get underway here, there's so many fun things that I've been digging into. A couple projects and filming things that we're wrapping up here before the summer. One of the things I was really excited about was that we got to go see The Bodyguard last week, which was really, really fun.
Yes.
Had a good time there at the Pantages. The people there are always such good hosts.
Yes, they are.
I went out to a friend's art show, had a good chance to visit with them a little bit. So the arts are kind of ramping up for the summer here in Los Angeles, which always makes me feel good, because whenever I'm involved in artistic endeavors, whenever I'm going out and seeing other people doing stuff, it always gets me so stirred up to do stuff on my own.
You being the fan of Shakespeare that you are, and living out in Malibu, he lives in Malibu.
Oh, okay.
All right. Nice. Must be nice, right?
Nice, beautiful area, yeah.
Yes, in my expansive 2-bedroom apartment. That's right.
It's okay. It's the address.
That's right.
Do you ever go out to Will Gear's Theatricum?
Very frequently. I'm a big Will Gear fan. Of course, we've interviewed Ellen here on the show.
Right.
Ellen Gear, who's such a wonderful woman. And
have you worked
so much great
before
stuff.
That?
I've never done a show there, although I'd love to at some point. It's obviously a great space. It's a different kind of thing, too. Have you been out there?
I have, actually.
What a beautiful
there.
Space. And they really do. I've seen so many shows there and known so many people who work there. They always say that they have a really fun working atmosphere and obviously such history there in Topanga Canyon.
And you know, you were mentioning The Bodyguard, which was so nice to see you there and also to see your wife.
Thank you. She had a great time.
Yes, she's not always able to join you when we go out on these outings.
Right. There are two minions who hold tight to her and don't let her out of the house very much. That's exactly right.
And they work cheap, don't they?
That's right. Yes, they do. And constantly, to be
exactly.
honest.
Exactly. So,
but that was a fun show. Did you enjoy it?
I did, to the extent of yes, I did.
I thought Whitney's music, it was so interesting to see how many people were there specifically because they loved Whitney Houston.
I think that's huge. I think that's kind of everything, really.
I think you're right.
The audience in general. And, you know, and then the film, of course. If you're a fan of the film, then, of course, you want to be there. But, boy, oh, boy, it's doing gangbusters at the box office.
As it should.
On the tour, it's just doing amazing.
Yeah, as it should. And it was interesting. There were some really great performances. The woman who played the sister was amazing. And, of course, Judson did a good job. Lots of really great performances there. I thought it was interesting, Judson Mills, yes, of course, who does such a good job there as well. So it was interesting when we talked about a lot of other people who were in that show and the good performances that they gave. But the one thing I thought was so cool to see was how the music was really a separate character, because people have so identified that movie with Whitney and with that music. It was really cool to see.
Very much, very similar to the format of Motown, the musical.
Yeah.
And it came through. Great experience, theater experience.
That's so true.
But with a book that was rather, it was interesting. It just could have been much more in depth, I think. It didn't give a chance to really, really get into the characters as much as you would have liked to have, or at least for me, being a theater goer. But
I think you're going to see different strokes
music
for different
was
folks there, because it was interesting to see how many people really were theater people versus Whitney people. And I think that you get that crossover where the story is very, very good, but it was definitely based around the music.
Right.
The music was the center of it. And my wife, who's a music person, and so many people in that audience who were mouthing the words were really excited to see it. So that was a good thing.
And I, on the other hand, was at the other end of the spectrum and took in a rarely done musical called State Fair, which is Rodgers and Hammerstein. Musical Theater Guild. And are you familiar with that company?
Not the company, actually, but the show.
Well, the company is they take these musicals and they purposely give them another life because they're from another time. Mm-hmm. And they're not done very often. So that's their MO. But they're also doing it in a very, very inexpensive way, which is intentional, and that is, especially with union actors and so forth, and their contract with the union, and they have only 25 hours to put the show on.
Wow.
Meaning 25 hours in the theater.
Right.
The actors who are signing on, and they're not paid, are signing on for the experience, and also they learn their music a couple weeks, maybe 10 days before they get into the theater, and their dialogue. So they go in with books in hand. There's no sets to speak of. There's a band, and, you know, it's all dependent on the lighting and, you know, some minor set pieces if necessary. But they're for me, on that particular day, it was just what the doctor ordered. State Fair, I don't really even remember seeing the movie, and I think
really?
It was the second version of that movie was in the 60s, I think.
I think that's
Anne
right.
Margaret and
I don't
Pat
remember the
Boone.
It was Pat Boone, you're right. I think that's
yes?
right. Yeah.
And it was pleasant, and it was sweet, and it was kind, and it was a beautiful score.
The music's very good, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not one of Rodgers and Hammerstein's best musically, but, you know, it's Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah.
You know, so it's got to be good, right?
That's one of the first field trips I ever went on, was
State
Fair.
Now, what,
really?
Where was that at?
Cerritos Performing Arts Center.
Interesting.
And
interesting.
I remember just thinking it was just totally harmless, but fun.
Right,
yes.
And I just, you know, I didn't walk away changed, but I walked away loving the experience. So everything you described it as is totally accurate
wow.
as far as that show.
And we were talking off air, all of us, and we were talking about youth today and you know, Facebook and all of these things and our lives and their lives. And there were two young people, probably in their early 20s, sitting in the row in front of me to the left. And they're, you know, at the end of State Fair, something is revealed. There's a relationship that's trying to kind of bloom in the show that never really happens.
Right.
And the girl is the person that doesn't let it happen. And she finally tells the guy why, because he can't believe that something's not happening. She says, "I'm married."
Wow.
And instead of it being received by these young kids as, "Oh, God, how could you know, that happen?" They laughed because they thought that was funny. Was like, what's wrong with that?
You know, generational differences.
Totally. How didn't get it.
How funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, wow. Well,
it's interesting because that, you know, that script, it's still a beautiful script, but it is an older script. And that's the reason it's not done that much anymore. Right. But when it's done well, that musical soars.
And it
really
was done
beautiful.
Well. And yeah. Kelly Dorney, who has been on our show before, starred in it. She was the leading lady. And Will Collier.
Oh, we love Will, of
right.
course. Yeah.
And Zachary Ford. They were the three primary stars. Wonderful job acting-wise, singing-wise. The band was great. It was just refreshing. It was nice. It was different. It wasn't, you know, watching the 11 o'clock news and the car chase, as we said earlier.
And we've obviously talked about Musical Theater Guild and what great work they do, but it is interesting to see they are pretty consistent as far as putting on really quality entertainment and benefiting really great causes as well. So they do a really good job of making sure that these musicals are out there and giving some of those proceeds.
Musical Theater
causes,
Guild is on the internet. Of course, look them up and see what their new season is, because this was the last show of their current season. So
that's right.
It's a different experience, but keep that in mind. It's not seeing something fully produced as opposed to partially produced.
Right. And yet, you know, every bit is entertaining, of course, which is really, I think, the key to what they do there. Ladies and gentlemen, our first guest founded Phantom Projects here in 1997 at the age of 17, partnering with his former teacher to establish an organization with the mission of providing high-quality theatrical experiences to Southern California audiences. He has since directed over 50 productions for the company, including The Diary of Anne Frank, Our Town, The Center of the Universe, No Way to Treat a Lady, and Through These Eyes.
In addition to Southern California, he has created an international scope of influence for the troupe, which has been featured throughout the world, particularly in Russia and France. The group will now be expanding their cultural offerings to a wide range of classics, including the successful run of Pulitzer and Nobel Prize recipient Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye in Santa Monica, California. He's joining us here today to tell us about Phantom Projects and how they are gaining traction here in the Southland. Please give a warm welcome to Steve Cisneros.
Welcome, Steve. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Good to have you here, man.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Boy, what a thrill this was to talk about. Just a little bit we got to talk about before the show. This is a really cool project that's been in the making for, am I right, 20 years?
Well, I mean, it's our 20th anniversary as an organization, and it's always been our mission to use theater to reach and teach teenagers.
Yeah.
And so the concept of doing a show every year that has an all-teen cast that has a very direct message towards other teenagers is what the concept has been since day one. And so we started talking about this show, #TheWall, about social media about 2 years ago, and just have been working on it ever since then.
That's great.
And it literally changes, I think, every day, just that we have more conversations with our 15 teenagers in the show and talking with them, being around them. And, you know, it changes hourly, just the world of social media. And so in order to make sure the show is incredibly accurate and up to date, it has to change with that. And I wouldn't be surprised if it changed even between now and show day next week.
Wow.
Are the teens in the show actors? I mean, to begin with?
Yes. Okay. So every year we do one show, a message-based show, and it has an all-teen cast.
Yeah.
And so this year, the #TheWall is that show. 15 teenagers, as young as 14, are in this program. And they're teenagers who are also brilliant performers.
Yeah.
And you watch it, and I mean, who can play a teenager better than a teenager?
Right.
And we would have no impact if we had a bunch of quote-unquote old 40-year-olds playing teenagers. The audiences wouldn't connect, you know? And so we have to get real teens in there, because they're the ones who are going to tell us if it's accurate.
Yeah.
If it doesn't speak to our own cast, it won't speak to the audience.
And they are getting their training from their respective establishments of school in the Southland here?
They are. A lot of them have different backgrounds. Some of them are focusing on acting. They go to art schools. Some of them are just acting as a hobby. And one of the biggest notes we have for the actors in this kind of a show is don't act.
Right.
You're 16 playing 16.
Yeah.
Therefore, just talk. Just speak from who you are.
Yeah.
And we give them a lot of freedom. Bruce Gabbert's been a playwright. He's a former teacher. We give our cast a lot of freedom for these kind of shows to say, look, it's written this way, but if that's not how you would say it, or you've never heard someone say it that way, tell us how you would say it, and let's change the line to be that, so that it becomes out. We almost want the audience to think that the actors aren't performing a play, but are literally just saying, here's what happened in my life last week,
that's
and
great.
Just doing it on stage from there.
Well, now, in the 20 years that you've been working on this idea of delivering something that is specifically teen-targeted, you must have seen a lot of changes in social media over that time, but just in the culture of teenagers.
Absolutely.
And you started when you were a teenager yourself. Well, how did the kind of shows that you do get dictated by those changes? Social media is obviously huge now, but you've done drug abuse as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I believe eating disorders as well, too.
Eating disorders, teen pregnancy. We've tackled all of them, and we just kind of were always – one of my jobs with this organization is to make sure we are staying relevant not only to teens but to parents who we want to take their teens to the theater. We want them to open dialogue after watching these shows, but also to schools. So we're always in communication with all three of those to find out what is happening, not to mention just myself being around our teens in our teen programs we have to offer. I'm always listening and talking and being around them. So they kind of guide it just by living their lives in front of me oftentimes.
Yeah.
You get to see what's relevant and what's being talked about. And I just, you know, I could probably write a million books to parents about how to learn about your teens,
right?
You know, and I could probably make a lot of money off of that because I probably know more about teenagers than most parents know about their own teens. So, but it's just always been something we're trying to do to keep ahead of the curve on as far as helping that dialogue stay open and create that communication through the arts.
Fantastic.
Well, and what you what you just said about how well you know teens, you get to know them in a different way that their parents don't get to know them necessarily.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the things we talk about also in preparing for the show with the teens is, you know, we always ask, or we have asked the teens, what is it you want from parents? And they actually have all surprisingly said, we wish parents were more involved. But then I kind of turned it on them and I said, yeah, you want them as involved as you'll let them.
Exactly.
And also, if your parent asked for your phone, how many of you would have handed it to them right away? Or how many of you would say, well, give me 2 minutes, let me go through my phone real quick and do some things? And so, you know, parents are always a few steps behind when it comes to social media. I had the benefit of seeing them kind of off their guard in a lot of ways, to hear them talk and be that fly on the wall with them. So I get to take a lot of that and put that in the show, and we're going to open a lot of eyes in that way.
Well, that's got to be something that you specifically have to create in order that safe atmosphere for them to talk like that here for this show to be successful, yeah?
We do. We absolutely have a safe space in our facility. City of Lamrata and the Lamrata Theater are very good to us and have a home provided to us to work out of. And so in those confines, we have so many deep personal conversations about these topics. One, to help them understand the material better.
Right.
Two, to prep them for the post-show discussion we have at the end of each performance.
You do that at every performance?
Every performance. Every message-based show, we have a post-show Q&A with the teen actors and the audience, at which point the audience can ask the actors any questions they want, but also it gives a chance for our actors to share their stories so that the audience members know these are not paid professional people traveling the country who are paid to say what we tell them to say.
Right.
They're all volunteer teenagers who are on that stage because they want to be, and they want to share their story. And there are some incredibly personal stories that will come out in the show from teens who have been bullied, teens who have been cyberbullied, talks of suicide, people whose personal lives were put out before they wanted it to come out, but people who, you know, used their information they found out and then put it out there. I mean, just incredible stories that, you know, three of us would have never conceived as a possibility in our teen lives when we were teenagers, and now you get 15 of them in a room and you find it's the more common thing than it is not.
Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Scary.
Very scary.
Well, the show we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is hashtag The Wall. You can obviously find that on social media.
Absolutely.
I know your social media is very, very good. But it's at the Lamrata Theater for the Performing Arts in Lamrata. Tickets start as low as $8. Is that correct?
One of our goals is always to make accessible to young people.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Easiest way to get tickets is go to www.phantomprojects.com. So if you want to type in Phantom Projects, you're going to see a lot about this show, but as well as other projects that they're doing there at Lamrata and around Southern California.
Absolutely. And you know, you do just 2 performances on one day.
That is correct. Just 2 performances.
May 18th.
It is our goal to take this show, though, into schools in 2017-18. So we're developing it for Lamrata, but our goal is to make it one of our teen-on-tour traveling programs that goes on to middle school and high school campuses so that the message can continue.
Yeah.
Although the script will probably change every month to make sure it's relevant.
Gee, and for many of the young viewers of this particular project, it might be their first experience in a theater.
Oftentimes it is, yeah. And we hear that. I mean, one of my favorite stories, we had a school come to one of our field trip shows, and they were begging their teacher afterwards to create a drama program afterwards because their school didn't have a theater program. And the teacher was crying to us afterwards saying, because she would bring random kids on campus because she loved theater. Mm-hmm. And she said that show that they were begging her, we need to start a program. And she was like in tears talking to us afterwards because the show inspired her teens to want to create their own. And so to see stuff like that happen based on the work we do is just the ultimate motivating factor
That's
for everything
wonderful.
We do.
Yeah. That's a really
Absolutely.
Great award.
And especially in these times when we're trying to keep the arts alive anyway.
Very true.
And there is a big petition going around on Facebook right now, which is something that Facebook does do well with writing Washington about in a much more serious and specific way.
Yeah.
Actually, John Lloyd Young made me aware of it last night.
And our good friend John Lloyd Young. So that's, it's interesting, too, when you talk about the people, the celebrities who get involved with these causes. A lot of that is through social media so they can reach their fans and that sort of thing.
It's super powerful, and there's a lot of positives, and we all know what the positives are. That's why it's everywhere. we all know what the positives are. We just don't always know what the negatives are until it happens, and by then it's life-changing in a lot of ways.
Don't you feel on some level we may not even know for years what the negative effects of some of the social media is? You were talking a lot and very intelligently something that, I have very limited experience with cyberbullying because when I was little, bullying was when you got hit in the face by a 2x4. That was when you knew you were being bullied as you walked home bloody. Now it's much more psychological. It's something that's like, hey, this is something that's subtle and kind of undercutting and backbiting, and that's a very serious issue that a lot of young people are dealing with today. You've seen some of that with your research for the show, is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. We stumbled across a story. Well, it wasn't difficult to find. If you do one search, you find a lot of them. But one that stuck out to me recently was a teenage boy who within 14 days of this video of him in the bathroom getting out, he killed himself.
Ugh.
Within 14 days.
Wow.
And it's easy to find that kind of story everywhere.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine, by all accounts, of course, I didn't know the boy, but by all accounts, by all interviews, he was what you would define as a completely normal, active teenage boy whose life was completely shattered in 2 weeks. And I can't even imagine someone's life taking that drastic of a turn in that short period of a time where they felt ending their life was the only way out. And that's because with texting or sending the messages around, this video got around within hours. It was everywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone saw this, what was supposedly a very, personal video of this boy that he wasn't even aware was being filmed, got everywhere, and he could not escape it. And what you and I were talking earlier about, the difference between cyberbullying and bullying, in the old days, if someone bullied you, they could actually have a change of heart and say, you know what, I'm sorry. And you could become best friends with that person.
Yeah.
And you almost can heal overnight.
That's absolutely true.
In this scenario, the person who filmed that video had apologized. It's too late.
Yeah.
You can't go back and take all that stuff down. You can't take it off everyone's phones.
Where was the video shot?
They filmed them in the bathroom, apparently.
He went to the bathroom?
No, in the school.
Oh, in the school.
School bathroom. And I don't know what the video content was, and they just said that some boys went over the top of the bathroom stall and filmed him, and before he was even out of the stall, it had gotten everywhere.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And just incredible stuff. And like I said, with our teenage cast, our 15 performers, they've all been a part of something not quite as drastic necessarily, but very similar to just being talked about in a way that you can't escape.
Yeah.
You can't run from that. And it literally is the world. If something goes online, it's everywhere. And even, the media today, newscasts show funny videos. They show things that they just found online.
Right.
Half the time, they're not even getting permission of whoever's in the video, because once it's on YouTube, once it's anywhere, you can just run with it at that point. And so you have no control of what is being filmed of you in so many ways. And that's a scary thought.
To this, what we're talking about, television supports and also doesn't assist in different kinds of ways in your programming. And remember the old Archie comic strip characters.
Sure.
There's a television series now called Riverdale, which is based on the Archie series, but it's given an entirely different life to these characters. Their characters are all there and their names are all the same.
Right.
But it's very much what we're talking about right now.
Right.
And it's all in the confines of a very small town. And the perils, that presents in itself. It's kind of interesting, but I'm not quite sure if what they're presenting is inspirational in any sort of way.
Mm. Yeah.
At least maybe it takes to get to the end of the series to see what the end result is.
Where it ends up, right.
Yeah. Yeah. But on an episode-by-episode basis, you see all of this stuff, exactly what you're talking about, the bullying from the teen level to the adults to, you know, everybody's got their own storyline here. And it's kind of depressing
for
an Archie comic to have turned into this on television. Again, is another sign of the times.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So, when I was researching hashtag the wall and kind of reading up on some of what it was about, somebody had compared in a different commentary social media to giving kids a weapon that they don't know how to use.
Absolutely.
And I think that's violently true, and that you go on and you do something and you feel like it may be positive or fun or, you know, connecting with your friends, and it ends up to have reaching consequences that go so far past what you could ever have imagined. I think it's something that needs to be discussed. But more than that, arts is a great way to get that across, because people see that there's a deep emotion in the psychology that social media is changing.
Right.
Your social identity is now your heart on your sleeve.
Right.
And when a picture is attacked, or when a body situation is attacked, or heartache or something by trolls, you end up really getting crushed and going inside yourself, which is when teen mental issues begin to happen the most.
Absolutely. So. And one of the things we learned, too, is that, you know, it was before social media, teens had up until the age of 19 or 20 to become adults in
the
real world.
Right.
But now they have to become adults in a virtual world at the age of 11, and they're not ready.
Yep.
And that's that weapon you're talking about there. They're not ready to go out in the virtual world and deal with all the very adult subjects or things that are around them. And so, and yet the parents who are supposed to guide them have no idea how to guide them, because that's not a world they were ever in at that age.
Yeah.
So we're really throwing our young people out into a world that they're not ready for, and yet they're also the ones dominating that world. And that's also what's incredibly dangerous to the society we're in, because they're not ready for it.
That's
and even
so true.
Through our discussions, their eyes are opening as we're talking about things, and they're hearing things through our own rehearsal process that they had no concept about in terms of the potential consequences and the results of what can happen when they're not ready for these things.
And I think that's the idea, is that now they don't have the time to get ready. What you said at the beginning of that is so true. If you can't protect your children from what they're seeing all over the place, that's one thing. But if you can't prepare them for it and don't know what they're into, that's a dangerous thing. You must see a lot of positive response from hashtag the wall audiences, people that come in to see this, and parents who are opened up to a new world, right?
We sure hope to. Yeah, we sure hope to. I mean, we certainly have seen it from our teen performers right now. And again, if the teen actors are excited about it and they feel confident that it's an accurate representation of their lives, then we're confident the audiences feel that way too.
That's great.
So, Andrew, you being a father, has this any part of what we're talking about touched your children at this point?
You know, it's interesting. I try to keep people away from touching my children. But this is one of the things that we've learned as parents. And I think it's not just me, but it's my generation of parents, which is we had the beginnings of it. We had MySpace and Facebook. And you cannot keep it away from your children. It's impossible. My
Correct.
Children are online for schoolwork, for homework assigned by the school. They're in an open setting where people can technically hack in and talk to children. So what you have to do is you have to say, listen, if anybody contacts you that you know, don't feel comfortable with, you come talk to your parents. But more than that, you need to let us know when you're playing, when you're online. You don't do it when mom and dad aren't at home or that sort of thing. And my kids are young, so this isn't a huge issue yet. But you start laying the groundwork, hopefully, for them to be 13, 14 and go, hey, this is something that I could be involved in, but it's not good for me. Just selfishly, it's not good for me personally.
Right.
And I got to be honest, the first time I was given, there's a game called Boonie Planet out there. If they want to sponsor the show, they can call immediately to State of the Arts and donate today. Boonie Planet. And my kids have been on and off of this thing. And you have parent settings where you can, you know, shut down certain things. But the thing that scared me the most was that other people can talk to your children if they're logged on at the same time. And you can't change that.
Mm.
What you do is you talk to your kids and you say, if someone logs on to talk to you, you immediately click the ignore button. No matter what the button says, no matter what the bubble says, you immediately click ignore. And if they keep doing it, you come tell mommy or daddy or your teacher or whoever, and you hopefully say, you don't have to be involved in it. If somebody tries to engage you, you don't have to be involved. And as a parent, that's the thing you want to teach your children, is that any situation you're in, you have the choice to stay in that situation if you feel like you can deal with it, or immediately step away from it. And for me, that's what social media is about, right? If Trump would turn off his computer, we wouldn't have a lot of these tweets, right? If it gets
his
bad,
mouth.
That's right. You turn off the computer. There's a great comedian who says, you should have a 15-second sober delay where you tweet, and then you immediately do a breathalyzer to make sure you were sober. Because if you're not sober, you shouldn't be tweeting or Instagramming or anything. So I always thought that was very funny.
Unfortunately, he is sober.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, obviously, we respect the office of the president so much, but this is the first president who's ever tweeted for himself, who's ever been on social media himself. And I'm just not sure that that kind of access is good for anybody in politics to have.
Oh God, so. It's embarrassing. It just adds to the embarrassment.
And I think you see that with celebrities as well. I mean, how many celebrities would have benefited by never being on social media? And you realize that if you don't have somebody running your social media and you do have that sort of fame and that sort of impact, you can do a lot of damage both to yourself and to other people.
Right. Well, it wouldn't be so bad for him to tweet if he just didn't do it all the time.
That's true.
And concerning the issues and things of you know, what he's talking about, that's what's embarrassing.
And yet very accurate of young people who tweet all the time, about everything they're thinking without thinking about what they're tweeting.
Right. There is
they
no
just,
filter
if feeling
at that
it,
age.
It goes out at that point.
I was looking at my little boy in the back seat the other day, and we're just driving down PCH, and he's kind of staring out the window, and he says, talking about a football team that he plays on, he says, such and such team is the best team because their wide receivers are really good, and I really like to play them because our team has really good defensive backs. And he wasn't talking to me or to anybody else. He was just talking, and that's what Twitter and Instagram is. It's just stream of consciousness. And if you take it to heart, if you really make it a huge part of your life, you're going to get stuck in a lot of muck. Kids do not have that filter until they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old. So we should do a live arts calendar and come back and
we
talk
should.
To Steve a little more.
We
Ladies
should,
and gentlemen,
indeed.
We're going to talk about hashtag the wall coming up. We'd encourage you to check that show out, and obviously we'll give that information again before the end of the show. But we want to take the time to tell you again about a show we talked a little about earlier. The Bodyguard is an experience like no other, filled with soaring vocals, terrifying suspense, and laugh-out-loud comedy on stage now at Hollywood's historic Pantages Theater. The venue is a perfect fit for this epic story of passion, peril, and undying devotion.
And this award-winning musical is based on the smash hit film of the same name. Former secret agent turned bodyguard Frank Farmer, played by Judson Mills, is hired to protect superstar Rachel Maron, played by Grammy Award nominated and multi-platinum recording artist Deborah Cox, from an unknown stalker. She is being protected. Each expects to be in charge. What they don't expect is to fall in love. So don't miss your chance to see this spectacular show on stage now at the Pantages Theater through May 21st. For tickets, visit HollywoodPantages.com or call 323-468-1770.
That's right, Michael. And this show really will speak to anybody who loved the movie and, of course, the millions of people who loved and still love Whitney Houston and her music.
Well, there's no doubt about that, Andrew. And obviously, we'd encourage our listeners to make it down to the Pantages to see the show before it's gone.
Right.
It's
and
on its national tour.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, these two stars were unbelievable. Deborah and Judson were great at what they did. It's interesting to see how much that music sticks with you after the show. I was humming it for like the next 3 days. So, Michael, we have another tremendous show, too. That's right. I hum well. That's exactly right. Humming is what I do. If there was a national humming competition, we'd be in great shape. Michael, we have another tremendous show that'll be gone before we know it as well. After more than three decades, Stage, STAGE, the Southland Theater's Artist Goodwill event takes its final curtain call on May 13th. This 33rd annual performance, Idols and Icons, will pay tribute to the stars of yesterday and today.
That's right, and what an amazing show it is. I go every year, and for such a great cause, David Galligan, the director, will be returning as, of course, the director, with Michael Orland, who is a friend of this show and a personal friend of mine, as musical director. He's, of course, the associate musical director from all those many, many years on American Idol. Stage began in 1984 and is the longest-running annual HIV/AIDS fundraiser in the world. In that time, more than 250 stars from Broadway, film, and television have performed to raise more than $5 million for HIV/AIDS organizations in the Los Angeles area.
That's right. Funds raised through Stage support services like primary medical, dental, and behavioral health care, food pantries, in-home health care, benefits, counseling, housing assistance, HIV prevention, and testing efforts throughout Los Angeles.
And what a fantastic organization. And the service that they have provided for these 33 years is incalculable. That was a hard word to say.
You nailed it.
Stage is one of the most valuable sources of private support for APLA Health Health's HIV/AIDS care, prevention, and advocacy work.
Tickets are now on sale through this final performance on Saturday, May 13th at the Saban Theater on Wilshire in Beverly Hills.
Beautiful theater it is.
It is, yeah. The show begins at 7:30 and doors open at 7 p.m. For tickets, you can purchase through Ticketmaster or Sabin Theater. That's theater with an RE.com. Don't miss this, your last opportunity to attend this sensational event.
I think in Beverly Hills they say it's Saban.
Do they?
I think so.
I'm not Saban?
That's why I've heard it too.
Saban, yeah, Theater. Saban, interesting. Yeah. It's obviously
maybe
it's a beautiful space, but it's great to visit that area too because it's such a cool area to be in right there on Wilshire. A great spot.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Obviously, audiences will not be disappointed. And now we will continue our discussion here. Steve,
yes.
What a great thing that you guys are doing with Hashtag The Wall. Real quick, can you give people a quick glimpse of the other projects that you've got coming up at La Mirada and around the Southland?
Sure. Our next thing coming up will be in June at the Met Theater, where the Rogue Machine has their series at. Mm-hmm. We're entering into the Fringe Festival with the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged. It was actually our opening show at La Mirada this current season, and just response was so good, and the cast we have.
A very serious drama, obviously.
Very serious. Very serious. Three men do every play of Shakespeare in 90 minutes. Three guys, Paul Green, Jordan Merriman, and Dorian Taylor, incredibly talented. And the response was so strong that we thought we had to bring it back.
Yeah.
So our goal is to bring it to the Met Theater in June for the Fringe, and then to actually try to do a West Coast tour in 18-19. So,
wow.
That's our goal.
Paul Green, the actor from Canada?
No.
The television actor?
Different Paul Green.
Oh,
Different Paul Green.
He'll take the checks, though.
But yeah. So, and then we also have shows on tour. Our new show this year also, we have a new one called Jargie the Science Girl. We take a real scientist turned actress into elementary schools, and we do live theater mixed with real scientific experiments. We
cool.
We do it for the kids, and we had two shows this morning, and the kids were just so fun to watch them get excited about things like chemical reactions and gravity and energy, and it's just a lot of fun to watch. And one of the hardest things about our group being 20 years old and growing is I can't be at everything anymore.
Right.
It's the most difficult thing in the world. We have an incredible team of people now who now work for the company, and I'm useless at times, and I don't know how to handle that.
Yeah.
I don't know how to be at a load-in or something, just sit there and have people tell me, don't worry, we've got it under control. And I was like, but I've got to do something. And, no, we're good. You just sit there.
Steve will carry the heavy lifting.
Right,
everybody
yeah.
move.
But we've got so much going on and a great team of people making it happen.
Well, obviously these are great projects, and they all seem centered around teen growth and how to help our young people grow up, which if there's anything more important in the world, I don't know what it is. We're training the next generation now. So.
And it's an audience that is not reached through theater. Almost every theater in the country has a program for children and for adults, but mm-hmm. where do you go when you're 15 to 19? There's no place yeah. for you that is affordable.
And that's right.
So that's where we try to fill that gap, and that's where City of La Mirada and La Mirada Theater have been so good to us. They've recognized that need and have made us part of their home for so many years.
But yet, your choice of La Mirada was because...
I grew up there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I grew up in La Mirada, and I was an usher at the La Mirada Theater.
Oh, nice.
And I became the house manager, and I started right when McCoy Rigby started. I know you guys...
We love McCoy Rigby, absolutely.
Yeah, you guys have with them, and so they're our neighbors in our space, and Kathy and Tom are very good to us.
Yes.
We have access to all their props, and we use them often for our shows.
So great.
They're good people.
Yes,
and,
they are.
And so that's where it kind of stemmed from. I was an usher, house manager, and then just in my time there realizing as a teenager that I couldn't necessarily afford the tickets to the theater to see the big shows.
Yeah.
You know, and as much as Peter Pan was wonderful, and of course Kathy's wonderful, and Charlotte's Web shows, things like that, those were great, but when you're 16, you don't want to see Charlotte's Web, and you can't afford Peter Pan necessarily.
Of course,
so
yeah.
how do you get to still go to the La Mirada Theater or any theater and be engaged in what's happening? So by Phantom Projects being brought into La Mirada Theater the way we have been, you can almost grow up with the theater now.
Wow.
You know, you can be a child in the children's series, be a teen, go to Phantom Projects, and then graduate to McCoy Rigby and stay at La Mirada until you're old and gray at that point.
That's what we like to see is people getting out of the house and going to see live theater. La Mirada
right.
certainly provides a lot of opportunities to do that.
It's a beautiful venue, absolutely.
Now, this is a world premiere for Hashtag The Wall,
it
right?
is,
and
correct.
If people were to type in Hashtag The Wall on social media, you guys would pop up pretty quickly?
After Trump.
After yes. Trump. After Trump's wall. That's exactly right. But am I correct? There's a subtitle here. It's not my irresponsibility.
It's not
is that
my
correct?
Irresponsibility.
Where does that come from? With.
Well, because teens oftentimes feel like they're not responsible for what happens, and their lack of responsibility is what gets them in trouble for it. So
yeah.
we kind of feel like there's both elements to that.
I'm hoping to learn that before I turn 50.
Right.
That's my goal.
My goal is to never learn. Just to keep running forward, never looking back. It just, yeah, I mean, people will, you know, like sexting is a big thing right now.
Yeah.
And
I've been trying to get into that.
Me too.
Good work.
Not happening.
That's the part you missed when you were a teenager then. That wasn't there, unfortunately, right?
Yeah. I had to write notes, and I didn't have nice handwriting. It was just terrible. Never worked out well. So. You're right, though, and we're laughing, but this is a serious topic, and this is something that actually turns into bullying a lot as well, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know what? And it's scary because oftentimes it's the girl who is stuck with the damage. Yeah. The guy gets to kind of walk away scot-free, as terrible as that sounds,
yeah.
but it's based on a factual element of it because they get the picture, they send it around, they're kind of applauded by the other guys in a sense. Meanwhile, the girl and all of her insecurities and all of her issues to deal with is out there. And there have been pictures of women who have been raped, who've been beaten and attacked, and that video gets around, and then the girl is the one who ends up killing themselves or hurting themselves or becoming depressed or any number of issues when they did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Every element of people watching that video should be angry at the guys and the people spreading it around, but that's not where the anger tends to go for whatever reasons. The victim is the one who is being victimized again.
Yeah.
And so for a teenager to go through that, it's just I can't even comprehend that at my age to have having to have dealt with that. But it is a big topic of the show, of the pictures going around and what happens with that. And, you know, you might get a parent even hearing this, you know, this show saying, well, that's not my teen. I don't have to worry about that. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
You're going to learn a lot from this show. And that's probably the biggest thing for anyone listening to this would be if you are a parent of a teen or you work around teens or you're around preteens, you need to come see this show. Probably a month and a half ago, I might have said, you should come see it if you can.
But now?
Now you need to see the show. Yeah. The more we dive into the topics and the more our teen cast is talking about it and the more I know that the show is an accurate representation of what's going on, you need to see the show if you have a teenager because you're going to learn a lot from it.
What do you think it would take to get some sort of moral compass with, you know, the providers of cell phones?
It's a great question, yeah.
And, you know, seriously, finding a way, and there is a way, to stop that type of thing.
Well, the problem is the people who make the rules and the laws have no concept of
that's
it.
That's right.
And that's the biggest issue. We were actually talking as a cast about potentially writing up some legislation or trying to create a new rule developed by young people that we can then send to someone to say, look, the people who are in charge of making the rules and the laws about this do not understand it. They're 50 steps behind of what's actually happening, and it needs to be young people who are kind of leading that charge because they're the ones who are being affected by it the most, and the people above that just don't understand it, and they can't possibly create something to protect young people when they don't understand it the same way. So it's very important.
I got something I want to say.
Yes.
And, you know, my name's on the show, so I'm going to go ahead and say it here. Are we ready? Everybody listen.
I'm ready.
Yeah, this is something that I don't usually talk about, this kind of stuff, because I live in the world and I enjoy the world and I kind of feel like whatever comes up, you just deal with it. I was playing a video game on my phone with my little boy, and it's a family-friendly video game, and occasionally, because it's a free video game, they send ads along. And most of the ads are for, you know, products, an ab exerciser or whatever, and it's a sports-related game. And I handed the phone to my little boy to do a couple little things, and I'm sitting right there by him, and an ad pops up that is a sniper game where people's heads explode within the first 10 seconds of a script of the ad. And I quickly grabbed the phone away before, you know, once I realized that it was a violent game at all. But then I saw the rest of the ad, and I have no problem with violent video games. I think that's fine if that's what you want to play. But there is no department that's managing content that's going out for app ads right now. There's nobody who's monitoring that content. And there's no rating on the thing before it pops up. You cannot take that image out of a kid's head. Now, fortunately, my little boy can't focus enough on anything to pay attention long enough to watch the whole ad. He was looking off in the other direction. But it made me very aware of how vulnerable we all are to content that gets stuck in your life that you can't get rid of. And I think that's very true when somebody starts either sexting or certainly on social media when somebody starts trolling you. That kind of thing can be so, so damaging, and you can't ever repair that, not make it like it never was. So.
Absolutely. True. Yeah. And, you know, one of the biggest advice that my teens from this cast would pass on to you as a parent of a younger child, it's about morality as a person now.
That's so true.
If you're a jerk in life, you'll be a jerk on social media.
Yep.
And a lot of the things we kind of talked about, if you just take away the social media element, you are who you are in either world.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of parents, you know, often just give the phone to their kids to say, there, stay busy now. But instead, parenting has to start earlier on that and say, stay involved in their lives, know what's going on so that they become better adults sooner so that when they go online, it's they are who they are in the virtual world and the real world at that point. And
well
they were just, that was their advice to parents.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah.
For sure.
Michael, we have reached that time.
We have.
Shall we embarrass Steve?
Yes, but give me 60 seconds.
You got it.
I just want to circle back to, we were talking about the stage benefit. What we didn't talk about was the concept and who's in this. So let me just do this real quick. Idols and Icons, as Andrew said, will pay tribute to Stephen Sondheim, Shirley Bassey, Bob Fosse, George Michaels, Michael Jackson, David Bowie, Prince, and more. And stars of film, Broadway, and television who are scheduled to appear in concert on May 13th, again Saturday at the Saban or Saban, depending on which zip code you're looking at. Theater, India and Reeve Carney, the great Carol Cook, Melinda Doolittle from American Idol, Andrew Fedorov, Barrett Foa, Sam Harris, the great Sam Harris, Jane Johnston, Dale Christian from Broadway, Vicki Lewis from television of Broadway, Kimberly Locke from Idol, John Mayer, Sharon McKnight, Madison Clare Parks, Jennifer Paz, Christine Petty, Jay Rodriguez, Joan Ryan, Jake Simpson, Nita Whittaker, Rumor Willis, who won Dancing with the Stars not too many years ago, and the wonderful Matt Zarley. Mm.
Wow.
So it's a great show. Yeah. Full orchestra. There'll be 25 pieces in the pit.
And they say that this is going to be their final show. Is that correct?
This
so don't
it.
Miss this one, ladies and gentlemen. That's right.
30th anniversary.
Well, obviously, this was a heavy show today with a lot of really important topics. But this show, hashtag The Wall, sounds like a lot of fun as well. It sounds like it really opens up some interesting things for parents and kids to talk about.
Definitely.
And you see some teens who can really comment on that well. But to end the show, we'll take it a little more lighthearted today. And we ask all of our guests here on the show to tell us something, an experience that they've had in the theater or on film or television, live performance maybe, where you've been so embarrassed that you almost left the industry. Something that maybe tells our young performers that no matter how bad one show may go, the show must go on. We call it
and now embarrassing moments.
It's the voice of God here on our show, ladies and gentlemen. Do you have anything that comes to mind, Steve?
You know, I do actually. Bruce Gewurztman, the playwright of the show, was my speech and debate coach in high school. And my senior year, I'd won this.
I'm sorry. He wrote the show and you're producing it?
Yes, correct.
And you guys were in speech and debate together?
He was my coach.
Oh, that must have been some wild conversation. No? Well, okay. Well, your argument's invalid because.
Right. Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, he was my coach. And I had won this scholarship towards college. And I had already won the award. But I was invited to speak at a gathering and do this speech that he would write them for our team and give them. And I, for whatever reason, wasn't prepared for it, but in my cockiness of a high school senior, thought, I'll read it all the way down there. I already got the scholarship. Like, I got this. No worries. So I go up there, and I've never had stage fright in my life, and I just froze. And I stopped, and I restarted three times, and I finally just said, thank you, I can't do this.
Wow.
I sat down, and I did leave the industry. I never performed again.
Oh, my goodness.
Really?
And I went into producing.
So you've been 20 years strictly as a producer.
Producer
with,
and director,
my
yeah.
God, I have made an impact.
On stage since. Is it related? Who knows?
Wow.
But I just never went back up there again, and I have not done a show since then.
Of course, you're not the only one. Superstar people on Broadway, Donny Osmond was one who I heard speak very well on it, have dealt with that sort of issue. Stage fright is a very serious issue that affects a lot of people.
It's actually, a panic disorder.
Yeah, sure. That's exactly right.
I mean, prior to that, I've been in a million shows. I'd even done TV stuff as a kid. I mean, I've never had a problem with that. And for whatever reason, when I'm getting an award about my speech abilities, it all just fled at that point from me.
That's great. I tell you, that is an impactful one.
Yeah, yeah.
But we may have lost a great actor. We won a great producer. So that's a good thing.
There we go. Give and take.
Thing.
I like that.
Michael, obviously, we've talked about a lot of really great shows here today. We've talked about Hashtag The Wall, which is Fandom Projects Theater Group's new production. And it's celebrating their 20th anniversary.
Indeed,
is that correct, Steve?
Correct.
Amazing. We've obviously talked about The Bodyguard at the Pantages.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Idols and Icons, which is the stage benefit, which we're very excited about, too.
And I noticed there's a supplementary list that you handed me right before we went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the names that I did not say are on that list. Do you want to read those?
I'll let you go ahead and do that, and we'll give the information here at the end as well for that one more time.
Real quickly, Broadway's David Burnham, and let me see, just down the list, Kimberly Locke from American Idol, and I think I said everybody else. I just wanted to point out Bill Hutton, who created the role of Joseph on Broadway.
Of course.
In Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
An iconic
Bill is still an amazing singer. Worth the price of admission alone.
And, of course, the Stage, Stage is a wonderful organization, but if you want to go ahead and find tickets for that, you can just Google Idols and Icons, and that'll pop up. Obviously, a really great event coming up on May 13th. The Bodyguard, once again, ladies and gentlemen, at the beautiful Pantages Theater is now on stage. Don't miss that opportunity to go see that. Just visit HollywoodPantages.com and type in Bodyguard there, and you'll find that. And, of course, the show we're talking about here today, Hashtag The Wall by Phantom Projects. You can get tickets for that very easily. We'd encourage you to check out their social media, of course, but just go to phantomprojects.com.
And that is May 18th, two performances, 10 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Steve, thank you for joining us here
today.
We really appreciate
it. Had a great time.
Michael, it is always a pleasure to sit across from you.
And you, sir.
Where will I see you next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.